This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Wednesday to you. Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio. And once again, the City of Angels are the City of Champions. As the Dodgers win Game 6, and now the World Series is over. The baseball season is over. And the Dodgers end a 32-year drought and are champions once again. They win 3-2, and it will go down in probably baseball lore as one of the strangest decisions that Kevin Cash made pulling Blake Snell. But was it as strange as people are making it out to be? We've got some numbers to go through to give you an idea of what Cash was thinking when he took out a dominant starting pitcher in the sixth inning. That decision opened the door for the Dodgers, who scored two runs that inning. They added another one with a Mookie Betts home run, and they won 3-1. There's an argument to be made that the Rays needed other things other than Blake Snell to win this series. We'll go over that as well, but let's not de-emphasize this victory for the Dodgers by putting it all on Kevin Cash. This was a team that was built for World Series titles. They just hadn't gotten to the finish line until last night. This was their third in the last 4 years in terms of getting to the series, and now they finally get there. There was an Atlanta Braves feel to this baseball team. You remember the 90s when the Braves kept going to World Series but not closing it out, losing to a team like Toronto or whatnot? They finally got over the hump in 1995, beating Cleveland, and now the Dodgers get this World Series title. They did not go 0-3 during this run. It's going to lead to more appearances. This team is too good, and they're too well-funded. They're not a team of mix-and-match superstars from other clubs. I know you can make the argument about Mookie Betts, sure, but this is a team that homegrown's talent. They do scout well. They have the means and the resources to hold on to these young players. The Rays are a different story. The Rays continue to go to the postseason, but they do so because they have to do what the Dodgers do on an even tighter budget. They get outspent by like a 4-1 margin. So the future of both of these teams, we'll talk about that coming up. But the Kevin Cash decision on Blake Snell, what are the numbers? What are the thoughts behind it? And will it go down in infamy as one of the bigger blunders in World Series managerial history? We'll talk about that next as we continue with Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
No ball, two strikes, two out. Urias to Adames. Call strike three! The Dodgers win! Finally, the wait is over. The Dodgers are the champions of 2020.
That's KLAC out in Los Angeles. Dodgers, 1988, their last World Series title, a span of 32 years, and they're the champs of baseball. We got to get to what happened in Game 6, especially that sixth inning. Before we do, everyone's temperature varies throughout the day, so it's important that you screen for fever in the morning and in the evening. Fever, a sign of COVID-19. Stay safe with the Exogen temporal scanner. So this is where we were last night. We were getting a pitcher's duel. We were getting Blake Snell mowing down the Dodgers every chance he could, and the Dodgers bullpen, which was doing the same thing to the Tampa Bay Rays. Tony Gonsolin giving up a home run to Randy Arozarena, and that was the only score of the game as we go into the sixth inning. Snell had struck out 9 of 18 batters. He was striking out every other batter that he had faced in the lineup. 50% of the outs he was getting was strikeouts. He was brilliant. Then Kevin Cash came out after getting one out and one on. He comes in to get Blake Snell out of the game. This is the decision that is going to be talked about when you look back on the 2020 World Series. This is the moment. This is the decision. Snell doesn't like it. The players don't like it. It is going by the analytics. It is going by the book. Snell goes out of the game. Here comes Anderson. Anderson gives up another hit. A run scores. There is a wild pitch. Mookie Betts scores on a fielder's choice, and the Dodgers take advantage of the lead. Here's Kevin Cash afterwards talking about the decision to remove a dominating Blake Snell after 5 1/3 and 73 pitches.
I mean, the only motive was that the lineup the Dodgers features as potent as any team in the league. Personally, I felt Blake had done his job and then some. Mookie coming around for the third time through. I value that. I totally respect and understand the questions that come with it. Blake gave us every opportunity to win. He was outstanding. They're not easy decisions. And that's where I came to the decision. I felt it was best after the guy got on base. Barnes hit the single. Didn't want Mookie or Seager seeing Blake a third time.
That makes a little sense here. Austin Barnes is the ninth hitter in the lineup. He gets on base on a single. Now, here's what he's talking about. At the top of the order, the Dodgers were bringing up Mookie Betts, Corey Seager, and Justin Turner. They were going to see Blake Snell for the third time in the game. So he's worried about that. He's worried also about, all right, is Blake Snell fading? Because this is what Blake Snell does. Go through Blake Snell's season this year. Right. This is including the postseason and throughout the regular season. Find me one game in the shortened season that he had in which he pitched after six innings. You don't find one. The longest he goes in any outing that he has is 5 2/3 at the end of the season against the Mets. And he did it in August against the Blue Jays. That's it. He never completes six innings of baseball. He didn't do it once the entire season. But here's the flip side of that. There are times when you have to throw those analytics out and just trust that this might be the night that your pitcher is dominating. Is this a decision you make with everybody, regardless of what happens, regardless of the circumstances in the game? What if Barnes's hit was the only one he gave up? What if he had struck out every other batter that he faced? This is a purely analytically driven decision. It's based on some, you know, the logic is there. But the fact that he went out and got a guy that's really their only chance of winning this game. One thing you have to remember about pulling Snell in this game. And it's been overlooked by a lot of people who have been talking about this and saying, well, look, he doesn't pitch past six innings, etc. This was a 1-0 game. If your pitcher is holding the Dodgers at bay, you have to leave him in until you really feel like he's starting to give up some hits. If Mookie Betts, Corey Seager, and Justin Turner beat your best pitcher on his best night, so be it. That's the two gladiator fighting in the ring scenario. It's my best against your best. You want to play percentages? Fine. Anderson coming in is he's been good. He's been a very good reliever coming out of the bullpen for Tampa Bay. But there has to be a moment where the managerial instinct is, I am seeing a performance that is worthy of extending it. I don't care if he has not gone this far. I don't care if he's never gone 7 innings in a game or 6 innings in a game or 7 2/3 in a game. This is a night. We talk about this a lot with teams that are on the verge of elimination, which the Rays were. It's everybody in the kitchen sink, right? Everybody's on deck. You have to play every single scenario to the best you can. There's no saving anybody for the next game. It's everybody is available, except your starting pitcher for game 7. But everybody has to contribute in some way possible, whatever way they're needed. And yet you went through the basic book on Blake Snell that you've ran the entire season with really nothing else on the line and said, this is what we do. This is how we're going to do it. Snell was absolutely brilliant. The Dodgers were ecstatic that he was getting taken out of the game. And like good baseball teams should do, took advantage of that. But here's another thing to consider here. Outside of Randy Arozarena, maybe Brett Phillips in that quirky single that scored a run and kind of bobbled the ball a little bit. Do you remember any other real offensive juggernaut output in this series? I mean, Brendan Lau hit a home run, hit a two home run game in game two. But other than that, the Rays offense has been pretty stagnant in this series. They haven't really scored a ton of runs. Where were they last night? When Blake Snell needed them the most? Arozarena hits a home run. But where were the base runners? I mean, look, this is all the credit to the Dodger bullpen. I've said this before. When you keep going to your bullpen, when you keep bringing pitcher after pitcher after pitcher after pitcher after pitcher in a game, you're bound to strike out something. I mean, you're bound to have a guy go, whoops, I'm sorry. I'm not like everybody else. I gave up some hits. I gave up some runs. My bad. This was not the case last night for Los Angeles. Gonsolin gives up the home run. He's out after 1 2/3. Here comes the pen. Guy after guy after guy after guy came out and mowed the Rays down. 16 strikeouts they had last night as a unit, as a pitching unit. They used 7 pitchers. They gave up 5 hits, 1 run. Where's the offense for Tampa Bay helping out their pitcher who's throwing his guts out? And when the Dodgers came back to take the lead in that game, did anybody feel the Rays were going to come back in this one? They didn't look good at the plate at all last night. That's a credit to Los Angeles and their pitchers. If you were Kevin Cash, where's the analytical reasoning behind this, given you know the only chance I've got in this game is to keep the one thing that's working for us in the game? Blake Snell was working for him. And I'm sorry, that comment that he made, I know it makes some logical baseball sense, right? You've got Mookie Betts, the best baseball player in the league. You got Corey Seager, ended up being the series MVP. You've got Justin Turner that can threaten with the best hitter in the batting in the third of the lineup. They're going to see Blake Snell a third time around. But isn't that comment taking Blake Snell a little downward here? Here's a guy who has been, I mean, again, he's either your best pitcher or he's right there with Charlie Morton. And you say publicly that you were worried about him being looked at a third time by those guys. You should have said, look, my guy can get those guys out. They are the best baseball players, you know, in the game. And I know my guy can get them out a third time. I had confidence that he would get them out in a third running. Instead, he says, oh, well, I didn't want them to see Blake for the third time. It was a bad move. It depends on what side of the coin you want. If you're on this analytical side of it, yeah, he's never pitched it past 6 innings of baseball, right? Here's a chance to get a new arm, a fresh arm in, to get to the top of the lineup of the Dodgers, all right, all of that. But doesn't this game need a little bit of humanity to it? Doesn't this game need a little bit of decision-making that's just based on gut? Does everything in this sport have to be these analytical numbers, these spreadsheets? Does everything in baseball have to be based on what the numerical advantages are, percentages, etc.? Sometimes do you just go, you know what, kid? Go get them. And if we lose this game, we're losing our game with our best. We're losing our game because right now you're better than anybody that I could bring into this game. I'm seeing something tonight. If this was a Tuesday night in August, you'd be on the bench. But this is game 6 of the World Series, and I just watched you strike out 9 guys and 18 batters that you faced. And you know what, kid? You go get them. And if we lose, we lose, but you go get them. Can we just have that? Can we have that moment? Because that was denied to us last night. This is not to begrudge Anderson, who's, again, coming out of the pen, he's fine. But you saw a performance last night from Blake Snell. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And Kevin Cash denied us an opportunity to see best against best in Game 6 of the World Series when Tampa Bay needed that win. It could have been heroic. It could have been a moment that lives in baseball lore if the Rays came back and won the series in a Game 7. But instead, the door was opened up, the Dodgers score runs, the Rays have no offense, Dodger bullpen is brilliant, and they're the champs after 32 years. All right, we're going to get to what else happened afterwards, and also a little celebratory from Ron Culver, as once again, in a very short span of time, he celebrates another championship. First the Lakers, now the Dodgers. We'll talk about all of that. Your tweets, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's, we continue with Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, don't let a bad battery leave you stranded. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts can help test your battery free of charge. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery for your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Keep your car on the road by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Once again, Ron Culver, a championship coming to the Culver household. More championship gear for you.
Yeah, it just feels good.
Sure it does. Whenever your team wins a title, it should be awesome.
Yeah, but this one felt better than the Lakers.
Well, 32 years.
32 years.
The last couple of years, they've had the two times they've been there, they didn't close the deal.
Yeah, and I'm more of a baseball guy anyways than basketball. And so this one felt good last night. And I think my favorite part, and Joe Buck pointed it out, was, the future Hall of Famer finally has a ring.
Yeah, that's the other angle to this that's kind of lost, is that does the narrative of Clayton Kershaw and his failures in October get wiped away because, one, he pitched really good in this series.
Yeah.
And two, he now has a ring.
And to be honest with you, he was my sentimental favorite for MVP.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There was an argument.
He pitched really good. He pitched really good in this series.
Seager was just that much better. And I can't argue with it.
No.
We can't argue with Seager what he did over the course of the whole postseason. But yeah, there was a part of me that was like, give it to Kershaw.
I'm going to ask Gabe Lax that, because I think baseball does remember is a very statistically based, sport. It loves its numbers, but it also loves emotion, right? It also loves good stories. And Kershaw, because of these two outings in these series where he pitched really well and didn't have those flame ups, and also getting a ring, it does make you go back and go, okay, let's put this all in perspective, right? He got over the hump. He wasn't on a winning team that won a championship in spite of him. He participated, did really well, and led them to a series, to a championship as well.
It isn't the same as, say, Kenley Jensen.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I agree. I'm not sure what's in Kenley's mind right now. I was so happy Dave Roberts didn't bring him out.
Yeah, that was a great, fantastic outing by the bullpen. I mean, just fantastic.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, after Gonsolin, they only gave up two hits.
Two hits. That was it.
That was it.
And they had the bullpen alone. Gonsolin had four strikeouts. And the bullpen had 12 on its own after an inning of two-thirds. And just fantastic. Fantastic. So Dodgers are now champs. But afterwards, this is the weirdest story that we've had in sports so far in terms of any moment.
Yeah.
This is a very bizarre situation. And I hate it because I see the news stories today. It's overshadowing the celebration of the Dodgers. It's overshadowing this accomplishment of finally winning a World Series after 32 years and finally getting over the hump after being in their third in 4 years. and doing it in the way they did it last night. Justin Turner tested positive for COVID-19, and it was told to him in the middle of the game. He was pulled out in the eighth inning and then, in isolation, found his way onto the field to celebrate with the team and actually took his mask off to have a picture taken.
Of course he did.
Of course he did. You're, listen, there is no way he was going to not go out on that field and celebrate. Andrew Friedman said the same thing. So there's no way he was going to stay out of this.
He's just going to sit there in the locker room and be like, hey, great job, guys.
Yeah, sorry, I can't play. I can't hang out with you.
Yeah, I'll lift that trophy in 2.5-3 weeks.
Go get a mask on and go out there and take a picture with your team.
Well, I mean, the thing I was thinking about, too, is like I understand pulling him from the game. All right?
Sure.
But that was still bizarre to me that you found out midway through the game. You didn't find out before the game?
Yeah, what happened was, I guess he had a test. He had Monday's test, and it was inconclusive. So they had to use Tuesday's pre-game test that needed to come back for him.
Okay.
But they let him play anyway. And then they told him, "Oh no, you tested positive." Now listen, if you know something more than this, I've heard, please let me know. This is not scientific. This is not an absolute statement. I'm actually trying to this is what I've heard. I've heard that when you test for this virus, you can test positive but be negative, but you can't be positive if you test negative.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you get a negative test, you are negative. There's no, I need to get it again. If you're negative, you're negative. If you're positive, you could be negative.
Right. You can have it's a false positive.
You can have a false positive. So he didn't have an absolute negative test. Somehow he was able to play. Now, this is where it gets a little interesting. And this is all Monday morning quarterbacking or Wednesday morning quarterbacking or Wednesday morning starting pitching. If this had gone to a game 7, what would Major League Baseball have done?
Yeah. I mean, would you have to test, what, 3 more times?
Right. And then you have to test everybody because he's been on the field. Yep. He actually played in the game, right? I mean, so.
And that was the thing. I mean, at that point, too, like when he came back out, the only thought that was going through our minds like, well, okay, if he is positive, he's been hanging out with these guys all game long.
Absolutely.
What does it really matter at this point?
It doesn't really matter. You know, that's a great point. He didn't just get it in the eighth inning.
Yeah.
He's had it. So going out.
It didn't come from that wasp that Bellinger was swinging at.
Right, exactly. By the way, Joe Buck, murder hornet in 2020. That was brilliant.
Yeah.
Line. Brilliant line.
He's a witty man.
He is a witty man. That is true. That is true. When you've done as many games as he has, you have that relaxed feeling about, you know, you're not nervous. You're not on the edge of your seat in a game. You can mention a murder hornet in 2020 because it just comes to you naturally in the wittiness of your broadcast. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's really no reason for him to have not go out. Whatever damage is done, right?
Right.
I mean, he's been hanging out with that team all day.
That was the only thing I was thinking about. I was like, why not just come out? And yeah, I mean, no one's going to stop him.
No.
I mean, the only way they're going to stop him is if you have someone handcuffing him or putting him in a straitjacket, throwing him back in a paddy wagon.
That's right.
And shipping him off to a hospital.
Yep. It's not against the law. He could be fined maybe, but he's a World Series champion.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
He's gonna
me the fine.
You think he's going to miss that opportunity to get a picture taken with the World Series trophy and with his teammates over this?
Celebrate with his team.
Not a chance.
You know.
Not a chance. And his teammates said, no, we wanted him out there.
Yeah, of course they did.
They didn't seem to care either. Like, we get it, but we're going to – Justin's coming out. Justin's coming out to celebrate with us. So, goodness. And so this – you know, like, look, I would feel bad for Rays fans, except there aren't any, so we'll just leave it at that. Dodger fan, this is a long time. I mean, look, this is one of the spend-a-lot-of-money franchises that has done a very good job with bringing in good young talent. 32 years is not a short amount of time. It's a very long time. We're talking Ronald Reagan was, what, president?
Yes,
still,
he was.
We had an election in 88 going into an election. So
no,
Reagan was still president.
He was heading out.
Yeah. He was heading out. So
yeah,
there was an election
done.
In November, but he was still president when the Dodgers last won the series.
Yeah.
It's a long time for a city like that and a franchise like that. Congratulations, champions. All right, coming up, NFL, AB to Tampa Bay. Does it make sense? We'll discuss.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. Your thoughts on the World Series last night, Kevin Cash's decision to remove Blake Snell, and Clayton Kershaw getting a ring and pitching well in the World Series. Gabe Lax of USA Today will join us next hour. We'll talk about the series and the Dodgers, et cetera, et cetera. Tampa Bay Buccaneers have signed Antonio Brown. That is official. He'll be eligible to play after 8 weeks, initially getting suspended for 8 weeks for personal conduct policy. So Tom Brady gets his wide receiver. Now, this is no secret. Brady likes Antonio Brown, liked him in the one game that he played together when they were with the New England Patriots. Brady even said so in a radio interview where he said, you know what, he wants to see Antonio Brown revitalize his career. So the Buccaneers basically give Tom Brady his wish. But at the same time, they bring in a troubled person. They bring in a guy that has a lot of off-the-field issues and a lot of on-the-field issues. Let's not forget, his Raiders stint was a complete disaster the entire time he was there. Remember, there were a couple of issues with Antonio Brown when he was with Oakland at the time. Remember, he had a helmet issue. Remember, he wanted a certain helmet, and it failed safety tests, and he wouldn't play without it, and he went and got a helmet, and that failed safety tests, and he lost his mind, and he had the frostbitten feet from a cryogenic chamber in France. And then he wouldn't come to camp, and then he complained, and Mike Mayock, who was a general manager, sat him down. They had a verbal spat. Mayock got called a name, and then he put out a press release, you know, saying Antonio Brown's either all in or not. Brown fought that, then made a video, just release me. The Raiders finally just did. And remember at the time, the Raiders really didn't give up a ton for Antonio Brown. They traded a third and a fifth round pick to the Steelers to pick up a Pro Bowl wide receiver who just had enough of being in Pittsburgh and Mike Tomlin. And at the time, it seemed pretty brilliant because we know that players, we can sense when players just don't like where they're at, right? They just don't, you know, it's a business, right? It's a job. Maybe you've had a job that you just like, look, I'm a very good X, but I'm not working for this company anymore, right? Whatever it is, but you don't like working for where you're working. You don't like your bosses. You don't like your supervisors. You know you'd be productive somewhere else. You just want to get out of where you're at. Antonio Brown, it looked like for a lot of people, he just wanted to get out of Pittsburgh. He didn't like the Steelers anymore. He didn't like Mike Tomlin anymore. Remember, he was calling me Mr. Big Shot and all of that. Tomlin told him to go home. He stayed home. He didn't participate in a must-win game at the end of the season for the Steelers. So the Raiders swoop in, and they offer two picks. One, again, a third and a fifth round. Steelers take it. And everyone's like, oh, the Steelers got the bad end of this deal. They had a Pro Bowl wide receiver. But what does Brown do the second he gets to Oakland? He becomes a problem. He becomes the center of attention for all the wrong reasons. It's not a guy that is trying to go, look, I didn't really like it there. I didn't get along with the head coach. It's just one of those business things. I needed to move on. I needed to find a new home. I needed to find new management. I needed to find a new location. Right? No. He ended up being the same problem in Oakland that he was starting to be for Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, even more so. In fact, it was almost a blessing that Hard Knocks was filming the Raiders that camp. He became the most entertaining part of that season, if not any other season. He was a mess. So what does he do? He goes to New England. He plays one game for the Patriots. Why isn't he on the Patriots anymore? Because he had problems off the field. There was a woman that accused him of sexual assault. He sent text messages in a threatening manner to her. And the Patriots, once they found that out, said, that's enough. We can't have this guy on our team. No, we're not doing this. We gave him a chance. We said, look, if there's anybody that would shape it up, it would be for a team that could get a guy to shape it up, it would be the Patriots. Well, as soon as this broke, Robert Kraft's like, nope, we're done. Done. Out. So the Buccaneers are bringing in this guy. Now, look, Roger Goodell has said, hey, we want Antonio Brown to be on the right track, right? He's suspending him for 8 games. You know, he's got burglary, battery charges. He's in and out of the court, right? He's released from house arrest. He's got all these problems. But Goodell, because as a commissioner, you just don't want to throw a young player out of the way. You don't want to throw him to the wolves. If there's a way you can get a guy to sort of get his life back on track through employment in the league, you may make an effort to do so. That's Goodell's thinking anyway. So Brady likes Antonio Brown and got Antonio Brown to the Buccaneers. Now, of course, because Tom Brady wields some level of power here, the Buccaneers are going to say, no, he hadn't really, he may have wanted it, but in the end, this is our decision. Now, nobody's really buying that. But here's the thing. The Buccaneers don't owe Tom Brady a thing. What was Brady looking for? He was looking for a way out of New England. He wanted to go somewhere else. He wanted to play for somebody different. Brady looked at his options. He looked around the league where a starting job was available. And believe me, even though we talk about how there's probably 17, 18 real legitimate starters in a league of 32, you probably can increase that to 20, 25 when you include young guys that you just want to go with, even if they're not quite NFL ready yet. There weren't a lot of places Brady could have gone. This 42-year-old quarterback, you're not going to upend your entire offensive system and team to bring in Tom Brady in the end of his career, especially if you've got a 24-year-old quarterback that's winning you a few games. You don't do it to sell tickets. You don't do it to sell merchandise. Right? So there weren't a lot of places for him to go. So here's Tampa Bay. Right? They're looking to jet out Jameis Winston. They've actually got an opening for a star. And oh, by the way, here are a whole bunch of weapons for you when you get down here. It's Florida. There's no state income tax. You can live at Jeter's house. Right? It works out great. So Bruce Arians is a player's coach, good guy to play for. You'll have fun. You'll smile a little bit. Maybe you'll actually enjoy waking up in the morning. So the Buccaneers owe Tom Brady this? To bring in a guy that could be disruptive to what they're doing. And also a guy that, again, look at what Robert Kraft did. He's like, this is my team. I'm not tolerating any of this nonsense. I'm sorry. You want to go sort out your life? You want to go send threatening text messages to women that accuse you of sexual assault? You will not do it wearing my uniform. And the Buccaneers are like, yeah, I know he's got a lot of problems, but Tom Brady likes him, so come on in. If you're in the ownership group, you go, look, Tom, thank you for coming to play for us. We're really excited to have you. But you know what? This is our team, and this is not a guy we want representing our team. Now, I know Chris Godwin's got hurt. It said, I know that. But at the same time, this could really backfire really badly. Now, Brady is confident that Antonio Brown understands exactly what he's walking into. That he is walking into a team that does have multiple options, does have multiple guys that can go get the football, and Antonio Brown is not going to be putting up Steeler numbers on this particular team. Okay. How do you really know that? He could say that. But do we have really any experience together? Is the one game that you had with him enough to make us believe that you know exactly what's going through his head? Because I got to be honest with you. I think John Gruden and the Raider organization, Mike Mayock included, thought that they were getting a certain wide receiver when they sent those two draft picks to Pittsburgh. Did they think they were getting a guy that would complain about his helmet, that would fight the league on the safety, that would come in with feet that were frostbitten from a cryogenic chamber, that would make big waves, big problems, call the GM names publicly, go on Instagram and post all the things he posted about how dissatisfied he was with the Raider organization and begging them to release him? I'm sure the Raiders were thinking, no, we're just getting a guy that wants a fresh start. Are the Buccaneers 100% sure that this mentality of Antonio Brown is not going to disrupt a 5-2 season where things are really rolling along and things are really starting to gel? I don't really know. I don't know if this is going to work. I'd like to say, Brady, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but this isn't the Patriots organization. This isn't a Bill Belichick-led team. This isn't from the top on down. We have a standard, and if you don't meet the standard, no matter what you bring, we will not tolerate it. This is the Buccaneers. Right? This is Bruce Arians. You might get away with a few things, and it'll start small. I guarantee you, if Antonio Brown's going to be a distraction, it'll start small. He'll just complain a little bit here, or he'll be a little disgruntled there, or he'll do something here, or he'll get involved in some sort of, get pulled over for something or whatnot. And then all of a sudden, it'll just blow up and magnify and magnify and magnify. If it's going to go bad, that's how it's going to go bad. I don't think he comes in and immediately destroys his reputation and his time with the Buccaneers. I think it'll just be small. It'll be like, oh, God, he's not really quite ready yet.
For me, I don't understand the move.
I don't either.
On the Buccaneers then, because they don't need it.
No,
I understood the logic, like, you know, when Bruce Arians was talking about it, you know, first of all, saying that it's not Brady's idea, that's laughable.
Very laughable.
But I understand when he was saying, yeah, you know, we talked it over because receivers were going down. I was like, yeah, I understand that. But now you got all your receivers back. They're healthy. Gronkowski's finally in football shape. I don't see what the need is.
Unless Brady is... I don't know, unless he's got some stake in Antonio Brown, like, look, just emotionally, like maybe he genuinely likes the guy and realizes that football is his way to his way in rehabbing his life and getting himself set.
Yeah. Maybe it's almost like a outreach program.
Yeah. Like, you know what? This guy needs he needs help. He needs support. He's out of control. Football is a stabilizing thing that can help him. Because, you know, we talked about this when Antonio Brown was going through that situation in Oakland, and this was even before the accusations of the woman who was painting at his house, a mural or something, and she accused him of sexual assault, and then he sent some threatening text messages to her. Even before that, when he was in Oakland and even in Pittsburgh, you and I actually talked about, you know, look, he might have something wrong with him. Like, he might have some serious sort of disorder that's causing him to act irrationally at times, whereas sometimes he's okay, but then other times he's really off the rails. And maybe somebody needs to step in and go, hey, man, it's okay. You know, I remember Brandon Marshall was dealing with something like this, the wide receiver for the Broncos and then the Miami Dolphins. And I remember he started opening up about it, started opening up about mental illness. And you know, all of a sudden you start realizing, wait a minute, it was eye-opening. And maybe, I'm not saying Antonio Brown, and I can't diagnose him, but maybe some of these outbreaks, outtakes, and these outbursts are a sign of that, because they're crazy. Some of them are just insane. And maybe Brady sees something enough to go, hey, you know what? We can stabilize him with some employment, doing what he does best, which is catch footballs for a living. And then maybe we'll work out something even beyond football. I don't know. Maybe that's the attractiveness. But I just don't understand when you're 5-2 rolling along and it looks like things are gelling, you'd bring in a guy that's got so much disruption and so much baggage and a reputation that, you know, that you're asking your fans to overlook in bringing him in for employment. It does not, I don't think it's going to work out very well.
Nah, it has all the potential just to be a disaster.
Absolutely.
And are they in a situation where, like the Patriots, we know the Patriots' MO, hey, it didn't work after a week, cut them.
Yeah.
Will they be able to do that? Way?
Will the Buccaneers be able to go to Brady and go, look, I'm sorry, we tried it your way, now try it our way. He's out. One misstep, that's it. No, we're not putting up with this. So, we'll see.
And please explain to me, too, how did he serve an 8-game suspension without being on a team?
Yeah, see, I guess you just go 8 weeks, right? Yeah, you got to kind of sign, and then you get the 8 weeks, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's like me telling my kids they can't have their PlayStation 5.
Right. So was technically he was – but what if technically he was suspended, meaning you can't do business with him for 8 weeks?
Okay.
You know, like you can't even talk. Like you can't. Well, I don't know. They got a deal together. He won't be eligible until after this week.
I know.
We'll see.
Someone's got to explain that, how that works.
Yeah, exactly. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loan options for your family? Rocket can. So, look, we're all caught up in the NFL now, and we got college football rolling along, and the Big Ten is back. Pac-12 is coming in like 2 weeks, week and a half. But you know what's missing? It's October now, the baseball season's over. The NBA was supposed to start, but it ain't going to be starting for a while. NHL should be rolling along right now, but it ain't going to be starting for a while. Hey, that's the 2020 we bargained for. You wanted those bubble outings at Disney World and Toronto and Edmonton? This is what you get.
Don't you feel like we're okay with it, though?
I'm okay with it. Yeah. I never really paid attention to those sports in the fall anyway.
Nah, I mean, actually, I think basketball's starting at the right time now.
Yeah, I think so, too. Like if I was going to a Preds game, this is probably when we'd go because, like, you know, people would be like, it's early, here's a ticket available. But It's too long. Like, the basketball season, we pick it up at Christmas, and it's like, hey, Christmas game's awesome. But up until that point, there's just too much stuff on the calendar to be all worried about. But the NBA draft is coming up soon, so you got that at least. That's the 2020 sports calendar for you. Coming up, Gabe Lacks, USA Today. We'll talk World Series and the good, the bad, and the dumb. It's all coming your way, Sports Map Radio.